Nick Ashew on the Fan. NFL schedule came out Thursday. It leaked out little by little, and we kind of knew the Commanders' schedule before it was all done. It's front-loaded. I mean, there's a lot of division games to start. I mean, the NFC is, you're going to see multiple NFC teams. You come back from the bye, you're going to see the Eagles again for the second time, and you're going to see the Rams. I mean, the first 9 weeks, you know, plus the Bengals in week 11. I mean, I would argue the first 11 weeks, really, really tough. But again, we know very little about this because at the same time, it's May, and there's a lot of injuries and a lot of things that can happen 11 weeks into an NFL season, let alone how many weeks and months we still have in this NFL offseason, as offseason, you know, voluntary workouts go on. But we did talk to Jordan DeJohnny of CBS Sports, and that was the big thing we got into was, you know, listen, like, we're seeing some of this now, but there's a lot to still look at down the road, including far more going on this offseason for the Commanders. Jordan DeJohnny jumps on with me now, CBS Sports, but I will bring this up. You are in Nashville, and the Commanders do play at the Titans week 13, so maybe that's going to be the easy game for the Commanders there, Jordan.
Hey, wow, right off the bat, Nick. What's going on, man? How we doing? Thanks so much for having me on the show. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Commanders and Titans are two of the more intriguing teams, I feel like, heading into this season. The Titans, of course, have not set the world on fire by any means over the past couple seasons, but they've got a prospective franchise quarterback in Cam Ward. They've got an intriguing new head coach in Robert Saleh. They've done a lot of work in free agency in the draft to surround him and new offensive coordinator Brian Daboll with some familiarity. So we'll see. We'll see what happens when we get to week 13.
What do you expect from Cam Ward this year? He's going to be on quarterback. Jaden Daniels is going to be on quarterback on Netflix too, but beyond them actually being on a reality show, there's real football that has to be played too.
Yeah, you know what's so funny is I got the notification, I guess it was yesterday, like, oh, the quarterback series with Netflix is back. And I was like, man, I really don't care about this show. I didn't even finish last season, whatever. And then I saw Cam Ward was going to be on it, and I said, okay, well, now you've got my attention. And, you know, when you're looking at the quarterbacks that are going to be featured in this season of the documentary, I would guess that your average fan base really doesn't care about Cam Ward. Sure, he was a number one overall pick, but he wasn't viewed as this generational prospect, and the Tennessee Titans are a team that really no one cares about. With that being said, Cam Ward, he has this elite work ethic, maybe more so than any quarterback in the NFL. He eats, breathes, sleeps football. And I'm excited to see how that comes across to different fan bases and other football fans that aren't really familiar with Cam Ward. So we'll see how that goes. But in terms of expectations, it's funny because we knew the Titans were going to be a bad team last year. They had the number one overall pick. They had a lame duck head coach in Brian Callahan, who we all knew was going to be fired. And looking at Cam Ward's performance, man, through the first half of the season, I was definitely unimpressed. I think he had 5 total touchdowns and 11 turnovers in his first 9 starts, but then he started to turn it around. I think he had 12 touchdowns and just 3 turnovers in his final 8 starts, and he started seeing some of the potential that this young kid has. The game slowed down for him a bit, even though he was operating behind one of the worst lines in the NFL. You saw the arm talent on display too. He was operating with a lackluster weaponry, I would put it. So now that that's been upgraded, the stage is set for him to have a sophomore breakout.
When you look at the schedules being released now, and besides the obvious where it's fun and seeing what creative social media stuff's going to be out there, especially the Titans. The Titans set the bar years ago at 2023 when they did the, you know, people trying to figure out what the team logos were and all that. I mean, that set the bar that's there. But from an actual football standpoint, like, here's where I am, Jordan. I look at this and go, I can't play the win-loss game, but I can tell if a schedule's tough, right? I look at quarterback matchups and things like that. But it's almost like after you finish the draft and everybody's got draft grades, we want to give them out. But in reality, we got to see what guys are going to do on the field. So it's tough to judge in that moment. How much judgment of a schedule do you have in the moment when it actually comes out?
Yeah, listen, Nick, I'm the most excitable kid in the world when it comes to the NFL, but I don't get too excited about the schedule release. Like, you could text me any day of the offseason and be like, hey, the schedule is out, and I won't even rush to the computer to pull it up. I mean, we got months and months to go over the new slate and dissect it from week 1 to week 18. But here's the thing. The NFL has found out that there's an audience for this sort of thing. So they're going to turn it into a grand production with the bells and the whistles and the leaks and the international games. Like, cool, brother, but it doesn't exactly scratch the itch in my soul that is missing football. With that being said, I mean, you look at these teams and you try to judge if they're going to be improved or if they're regressing, depending on what happened in free agency and the draft. So I'm actually working on a project right now. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, but basically what I've done is I went to DraftKings and I wrote down every single NFL team's odds of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And now that the schedule is coming out, what I'm going to do is sit down tomorrow morning and see how those odds have adjusted to see which teams got better odds of making the playoffs or got worse odds of making the playoffs based on what the schedule is. So I'm with you on paper. It's kind of fun to break down with your team's wins and losses. But again, there's a lot of time between now and week one of the year.
I love that idea, actually. I'll be really interested to see. If you put that out, I hope you do that, because I would really love to see how much of a difference there was in those. You know, we got a ton of international games, too, Jordan, and we know what the NFL is trying to do. And I think it's smart. You're expanding the game worldwide because it's not just the NFL you're trying to expand, but it's the entire sport of American football that you want to now showcase around the world. Are you a fan of this many international games? Do you want to see more? Because I'll tell you this, I think at some point we're just going to have like a game in every time zone, it feels like, at some point.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not a fan of it, but I mean, it doesn't matter what I think. The NFL is trying to take over the world. In fact, sources tell me that when we get the technology back of getting back to the moon, that's where the NFL wants to open up the season in 2040, right? They are trying to take over the world, and the international games are not for the fans in the States. I mean, no one's going to wake up at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. I'm in Central Time. Imagine how tough it is for me to watch the Patriots and Steelers or whoever play in Dublin. But it's about expanding the global footprint of the NFL. Now, what I'm really curious about is, what does the NFL do with it? I don't think that they're just trying to take money from different parts of the world, but I think what they're trying to do is maybe set the stage for some kind of international expansion. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if they want to start a league or move a couple of teams overseas, or maybe they buy into the UFL and place them over in Europe and start a farm system with financial backing. Who knows? But I think that's an interesting part of the conversation is, cool, the international games have been successful from an international perspective, but what comes next?
And that's, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, you bring up a great point, because it's obvious they're trying to expand. It's obvious they're trying to, you know, have the game become popular all around the world. But it's like, what do you do with that next? To me, I feel like this is a setup for some sort of like NFL Europe again. It didn't work long term the first time, but I just feel like the world wasn't ready for it. Now we're in a spot where they have expanded it more. I don't know. Here's my big thing, Jordan. I would love for the NFL to have some sort of minor league system, just to give players, especially quarterbacks, more time to develop, where, you know, that helps the league down the road if you have player development that's beyond just practice squads. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's something like that. Could you see the NFL ever trying to develop an actual minor league system beyond the UFL or whatever they're doing right now with that?
So a couple years ago, I theorized that if the UFL could prove it could stand alone and operate adequately financially, the NFL would then throw its weight behind them and adopt them as a farm system with new financial backing. And then who knows, like I theorized, maybe they could go overseas. But that was kind of my main point, was what if the NFL could get behind a spring league or just a minor league team or minor league in general. But the other part about the argument or the discussion is that, does the NFL necessarily need it? Like, are they craving some kind of developmental league right now? Because I would argue they don't have to do that. I think they're fine the way they're set up now. There's a lot of talent to go around, but is there enough talent to have an entire farm league that NFL teams can pull into?
I would love to see something like that. Talking to Jordan Dejani here on Team 980, you know, we now have kind of this like quiet point in the NFL season. You're not going to be hearing too many rumors. It's more about just like where A.J. Brown's going to go and where Brandon Ayuk's going to go. How do you see kind of the rest of the NFL offseason shaping up, in terms of, is it just going to be basically a Brandon Ayuk saga that's drawn out forever? A.J. Brown gets traded quickly. Like, what are some of the next things that you could see happening? Because I feel like it's kind of a very open case right now.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on Stephon Diggs, you know, some of the top free agents, where potentially could he land now that, you know, the court stuff is kind of behind him, with the Washington Commanders potentially be a match. Mm-hmm. I'm also keeping an eye on some extensions. I mean, let's talk about the running back market for a second. Two of the best running backs, if not the top two running backs in the NFL, are looking for extensions that could put them over Saquon Barkley as the highest paid running back. And that's Jahmyr Gibbs of the Detroit Lions and then Bijan Robinson of the Atlanta Falcons. Which one of those guys gets to the negotiating table first, and how hard does that make life on the other party who does not sign their individual? So that's something I'm keeping an eye on too.
The AFC next year. So I look more and more at the AFC, and I just see an absolute gauntlet for I mean, literally could be 10 potential playoff teams next year. when you look at the AFC, I feel like the Pittsburgh Steelers might be a team that has a fall off, mainly because, I mean, who knows what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. We're still waiting to see what happens with that. I mean, the Ravens, are they back in the playoffs? Are the Bengals healthy so they can get back in the playoffs? Where are the Chiefs after the season they had last year? It to me, Jordan, just feels like the AFC is as loaded as it's been, not to mention the defenses you've got at the top of the Broncos and Patriots. Bo Nix has to get healthy. I get that. But, you know, the Patriots have improved this offseason. I don't know, man. I look at this AFC and go, it is going to be really, really tough for even good teams to make the playoffs on the back end there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I guess if you're asking me for a couple of regression candidates, one that jumps off the page immediately has to be the New England Patriots. I mean, they played the easiest strength of schedule since the turn of the millennium. They're not going 14-3 once again. And while I do love Drake May and I love this defense, you also have to wonder how much the Mike Vrabel drama is going to affect this team. And there's probably some people out there listening right now that scoff when I bring that up. But Mike Vrabel is kind of this alpha male that is very smart and does no wrong. And now that this entire situation has come to light, you just have to wonder, you know, how he's looked upon by his players and in the building. You know, I think that's a very fair point. But I would also bring up the Pittsburgh Steelers, just like you did. Mike McCarthy is coming in. He's not exactly the head coaching candidate I think that fan base wanted in Pittsburgh. You know, it seemed like they were long overdue for a reset to bring in a younger coach with new ideas and a new quarterback who is younger and more athletic. Instead, it seems like they're stuck with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. So it's tough to imagine the Steelers making the playoffs again. I'll bring up the Baltimore Ravens, man. I mean, they have a new head coach, and it's not like new head coaches come in, first-time head coaches, and find immediate success. I understand you have Lamar Jackson, but he's dealt with some injuries over the past couple seasons. So can he be Superman and take the Ravens to the playoffs? And finally, I'll talk about the AFC South real quick. I find them super intriguing. The Jacksonville Jaguars were a surprising team last year. No one saw them going 13-4. No one saw Trevor Lawrence being an MVP finalist, but there he was. Is that a team that's going to keep on that trajectory, or are they poised to take a step backwards? Same thing with the Houston Texans. I like that Texans defense better than I like the Seahawks defense last year, but C.J. Stroud is not playing good ball, so what exactly is the story going to look like for him? And how about the Indianapolis Colts? We thought they were going to win the Super Bowl through the first half of the regular season last year, so what's going to happen with Daniel Jones? Is he really this new brand Indiana Jones that's going to take the Colts to the promised land now that Alec Pierce is locked up long-term with Jonathan Taylor? Or are they going to take a step backwards? So, yeah, that's my grand landscape of the AFC.
And it's true, though, because we were talking about this earlier. I mean, the Commanders are also going to see the Texans week 14, and it's like, okay, what does that Texans team look like? We know how great the defense is, but what does C.J. Stroud look like as a quarterback? So, yeah, I think, listen, there's a ton of questions around the AFC. On the NFC side of things, listen, the Commanders are a team that won 5 games last year. They did a lot this offseason. I like their draft. I'm so glad Sonny Styles fell to them at 7. You're on the outside. You're not obviously in this. You cover the entire NFL. You see all these teams. I'd love to know a perspective from somebody like you that sees the Commanders from the outside, from their offseason to their draft to where they are now. What do you see in them?
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like I'm not as optimistic on Washington. The Philadelphia Eagles are a really interesting story we could spend hours on, because that could be a team that gets back to the Super Bowl, or they could fall flat on their face and finish 3rd in the division. I think either possibility is possible. The Dallas Cowboys, if that defense is improved, that's a team that could be top 2 in the NFC East too. But looking at the Washington Commanders, there's 2 main bullet points I have for them getting back to contention, if you will. Number 1 is obvious, right? Jaden Daniels has to remain healthy. When he was a prospect coming out in the draft, I actually found it kind of tough to fall in love with him, because I was 100% sure he was going to leave his first NFL game via ambulance in Tampa Bay, just the way why he plays. But I was wrong, right? He was Superman, and he got them to the NFC Championship game as a rookie. And I said, wow, maybe I'm wrong. He is LeBron James of this league. But then year 2 happens. He misses more games than he plays in. So what does the future look like for Jaden Daniels? But on top of that, you know, I think that's something that from a national perspective – not a lot of people are talking about, but was this Commanders defense. It ranked worst in the league last year. Even if we were playing a Madden video game and we were able to turn off injuries with Jaden Daniels, I don't think he could have taken his team to the NFC Championship game with the way the defense was performing. So the question is, did Washington do enough in the offseason to get better, to get back to contention? You get Odafe Owe and Chase in that pass rusher. Those guys could be hit or miss. I'm kind of curious about the secondary. You got Trey Amos, Amik Robertson, Mikey Sainristrill. You brought in Maryland legend Nick Cross, and then Quan Martin is at safety too. Is that secondary good enough on paper to keep up with some of the weapons that the Philadelphia Eagles and Dallas Cowboys have at their disposal?
And those are the same questions that everybody's asking here in D.C., and they're not going to be answered for a while, but there's certainly hope it's not another 5-win season, because, God, suffering through that was just after a 12 wins. Just brutal. I mean, it's so deflating to watch what the expectations were to what they became that year. So at least just split the difference. Let's get to, like, 8 wins. Get over the win total to 7.5, and then I think that's at least feels like there's improvement there. Jordan DeJani, CBS Sports. Love talking to you, buddy. Great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Let's do it soon, man. Thanks.
Oh, man. And you know, listen, every question he brought up about the Commanders, that shows you, right? It's not just us around here asking these questions. It's everybody. There are a lot of questions, specifically the defense. And then, to me, it's the defense as a whole, and it's Jaden Daniels staying healthy. We know what Jaden Daniels can do as a quarterback. It's just a matter of, can he stay out there on the field consistently enough to be able to do it? You're always going to deal with some level of injuries in the NFL. Every team does. But you want to mitigate that risk as much as possible, and you know, when it comes to your quarterback, protecting him is key, but you also don't want to take away that ability to run, because it is a weapon that he has. Just got to do it smartly. It's tough. There's that balance there that, I mean, teams have always struggled trying to figure this out with quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks that are mobile, quarterbacks that can run, quarterbacks that can use their legs, great, but how do you do it safely? And it's hard, especially in that moment. So I'm Nick Ashew. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Have you ever eaten pizza off the street before? This is the type of stuff we talk about during the break. That's why I love working with Metal Chris, because he's down for anything. Never eaten pizza off the street there, buddy? Ever? Not a thing?
No, no. I remember the pizza rat memes going around, though. I love those.
I have a friend that has definitely done that before. But he's also the friend that's like super grown up, buttoned up, great career, but yet at the same time, when the cicadas were everywhere, he was willing to roast a cicada in a bonfire and eat it and does stuff like that. I'm like, there's two sides to you. I appreciate that sometimes with people. Yeah, I've never eaten a pizza off the ground before, but he has. So there's that.
Was he like drunk outside after last call, dropped a jumbo slice and picked it up real quick, or like what are we talking about here?
You are relatively close in that conversation. Yes,
I'd say that's. I still wouldn't eat that though. Just ugh.
I have had my fair share of jumbo slice over the years, and I have literally been there when I've seen former Redskins walking in the same line, and I've seen stuff dropped in those dirty floors and picked right up and eaten with those giant jumbo slices. Let me tell you something. Jumbo slice, it's making me... See, this is 2 days in a row now, buddy, that we've talked about food, and I've gotten very hungry.
I know. You're jumbos, not the only one.
I'm breaking the morning fast if I eat before noon here, so I'm trying my best to get through this, but you're making me hungry talking about jumbo slice. Yeah, it was don't waste the pizza, and it was just there, face... But it was... So from what I remember, it was a full pizza. It had fallen out. Somebody else had dropped it. The full pizza fell out of the box, but went not sauce and cheese side down, crust side down. So
no, just it's still gross.
Less absorption of street particles. Therefore, no. It was a cleaner pickup and brush off, and you're able to eat it.
Oh, no, no. This is, I assume, in D.C.?
No, this was actually in Annapolis.
Yeah, but...
Many years ago. This is a many years ago story, but... Listen, it's not just D.C. where people have a few too many and then partake in late night pizza.
I mean, like, this is in the city is my point, like, where people are walking all the time and it's, no, just, no.
Well, pretty much every sidewalk is dirty, if we're being honest, so. But I'm with you. Actually, though, technically, you ever looked up, the 5-second rule is not a thing. It's like a minute. Bacteria can't grow for, like, I think it takes like a minute for it to grow on your food.
I mean, that's cool, but I got kids and you drop stuff on the ground, it comes up with hair and stuff on it, so you can tell me, like... I just, I'm not eating that stuff off the ground.
That's fair. Listen, I I'm not encouraging it. All I'm saying is that it does exist, and people have gone that route before, and it's now making me want pizza.
So like, just because it doesn't make you sick doesn't mean you should do it, you know?
Oh, well, listen, that's a lot of things in life, isn't it? I think we could apply that logic to a lot of things.
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, listen, now let me ask you this. If you were in the kitchen cooking or something, and you dropped... something on the floor. At what point is it a no-go versus yes, I'd still eat it?
I mean, I guess it depends on what it is.
Right? I think that's important. If it's, a raw vegetable you're going to cook.
Was it something you can be washed off or boiled or like, there's like, but I don't eat off the floor. I'm not, it's like,
All right, so you and I talked about wings yesterday. If you were to drop a freshly made just drumstick or
no,
flat,
I'll just
whatever.
Order more wings. I can drop the whole order. I'll just order more wings.
You wouldn't eat it if you'd order a whole new set and throw it all out.
If they fell on the floor, no, I'm not. No,
I'm not talking at a restaurant. I'm talking at home. Like you ordered wings and it was delivered to your house and you dropped three of them on the floor.
I'm not eating those three. No.
I'm eating them. It doesn't bother me.
Again, I got kids, man. Our floors, we sweep them all the time,
that's fair.
Like pretty much every day and whatever. But that doesn't mean there's just not. It's like hurricanes in your house, you know?
That's fair. But we have pets. We don't have kids, but we do have pets. Now, again, this is where kids and pets can be relatively equivalent in terms of tracking stuff in the house. Our dog tracks stuff into the house, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's a limit. When the house is freshly clean, I think I do it. If there's, like, you know, it's raining outside and muddy paw prints are on the floor or something, yeah, then that's probably a different story. Although, it's just dirt. Dirt don't hurt. Come on now. Dirt don't hurt. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, this is good to know. It's good to know.
Like maybe put some sriracha on it.
Oh, there you go. The sriracha burns everything off. You're fine. I think you're good. I think it honestly depends on the food, if we're being honest with ourselves. It also depends on where. Like, so I would be okay with it at home, but I wouldn't if I dropped food on the kitchen floor there at the cafe there at the studios.
Oh, no.
No, it's not happening.
No.
I don't know the last time anything's been... Well, I guess they come through in the clean. It's just the... There's no supplies anymore. There's no, like, mugs or... Like, I wouldn't even use a mug that's sitting in those cabinets anymore because I don't know how dirty they are.
No, I keep a few disposable plastic cups in my locker.
You're smart. That's the way to do it. That is the way to do it. Now, is your locker clean?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Have you ever... have you heard the story about how Chris Russell forgot his lock combination and it's been sitting there for years?
Yeah, I also wouldn't store food in my locker, so...
Do you think that he stored food?
There's nothing perishable in there. I have, you know... Paper towels and my headphones and things go in there. Not like, you know, food items that could get disgusting.
So it's funny you say that because now we're just on food and we're just going to do this for the segment because I've decided this is the rules. So right around when the pandemic hit, so this is many years ago, when I was at NBC at the time, and I won't say who this is, but I will say he has been a guest on a show with me recently and he's very prominent in DC. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to call him out, but his desk was right next to mine, and, you know, when they shut things down, we basically just were, like, told, don't come in. We're going to just figure it out remote. I mean, everybody remembers what happens in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
It was 6 years ago. So I found out later that the neighbor to my desk, whose name shall not be said publicly, had Chipotle that was left in the desk and never put on the fridge, put in the fridge the day before everything was shut down. And to this day... From the information he's given me, he did not ever remove it from the desk, yet when he went into, when people were allowed to go in like stages to get some stuff, and we were all separated, it was peak pandemic, it was no longer in the desk. Now, I know that there were people in there monitoring the actual studio and the offices and just, you know, kind of separated and doing the whole thing. My theory is that the stench was so bad somebody found it and removed it. But we don't know how, we don't know where it went, but we know Chipotle was in the desk for some reason being saved for later as opposed to in the fridge and never retrieved because everything was shut down and we were told to stay home.
I mean, maybe the ants just marched off with it.
That could be it. Super ants at that point carried off the giant tray or the burrito bowl or whatever it was and just marched along and had a supper, you know, had a feast. At a buffet for the rest of their little ant lives.
So where I was working at a different radio station at that time, but I still had to go in every day. I was given the "you're an essential worker" thing,
yeah.
And so you know I didn't get to stay home. Which you know I mean there's pros and cons. I was still getting paychecks, but I wasn't.
Sure.
You know it was a very stressful time.
Sure.
But I certainly wasn't leaving food around and. I actually had to clean our studios where I was working, the radio studios, after every show, which was not fun
like
at all.
Like the spray down and everything?
Yeah, I was like spraying, rubbing alcohol and things,
yep.
Just like killing everything after every show because people spit when they talk, you know, and we had to
constantly
be cleaning the mic screens and all that stuff, which was absolutely no fun. But, you know, I was nobody left food around like that. Like, but maybe somebody, if there's someone like me doing that still... Like, I don't know. Maybe they just got rid of the food. I don't know.
That's what I think, is that somebody just went in and got it or, you know, knew it was there.
It's not in the fridge. It's not really edible.
No, no. And it wasn't removed right away either. I just know we were on, I think we were on some sort of call, or it was, I think we were taping something, because at that point we were just trying to figure out how to do stuff remote. Now it's easy, but, you know, and I remember him just mentioning, like, so I forgot about this. It's like, well, I think it's edible.
I remember the drives to work being super awesome, though, because, like, nobody was on the road.
Nobody. Yeah. There was no traffic for a long, long time.
Yeah. I'd, like, go down during rush hour, like, go down 66, and there'd be, like, three other cars.
Yeah, yeah. Flying. I remember flying when you could fly, but they had separate seats, and that was a whole thing. Because I think we ended up, my wife and I ended up just going and staying in, like, Arizona. We were in Scottsdale and Sedona for, like, weeks, just because it was like, we can work remotely, let's just do it. And I just brought cameras and did it all that way. It was the very beginning of that kind of stuff still.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it was, so that's, there's limits to the food. This is how we got to this point. This is, I blame you, Metal Chris, because I'm starving now, and you got me on food again. Damn it! All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan.
You see an eclair in the receptacle, and you think to yourself, what the hell? I'll just eat some trash.
All right, we're not eating trash, but there's, you know, you got a few seconds if food falls on the ground to be able to eat it. How did we get to this point? Nick Ashew on the Fan. This is all Metal Chris. This is all you're doing. You're stirring the pot here now. Great clip, by the way.
You sound like George Costanza here, though, trying to defend eating this.
I mean, it is true, though. All right, I need to look this up. I did not look it up. No, I'm not going to do it. Yeah, it's fine. Listen, all I'm saying is, if food falls on the floor, it's not instantly dirty as long as you're avoiding the hair and dirt. But if you're talking germs, bacteria, things of that nature, it does not form right away. So you're not going to worry about getting sick from that being the case. I just don't remember the number, but I think it's like a minute it takes for it to actually form on there. But I'm sure there's somebody screaming at me telling me that's totally wrong. And maybe that's the case. Then again, if you drop a piece of bread, you can brush it off and it's fine. If you drop a piece of pizza face down and it's sauce and cheese and it's got stuff sticking to it, it's probably not going to be something that you want to eat. So I get it. This is where we work. I don't know how I transition away from this, but I'm going to try the best I can. Nick Ashew on the Fan here. Debo Samuel, I don't know if he eats food off the floor. That's how you do it, my friends. We can always find a way. I'm kind of getting more and more into this idea that the Commanders have more options at wide receiver than we're even giving them credit for, right? So the Brandon Ayuk thing we know is going to be a conversation for a while, and he's going to be held hostage by the 49ers for the foreseeable future. I mean, we're talking in a training camp, most likely. So you can't sit and wait for him to be somebody that you just have as this answer and is going to be a guy that adds to your receiver room and everything's going to be fine, and after 18 months of not playing football, he'll be back to peak Brandon Ayuk, which was a short window anyway. It's just not going to happen. That's not the reality. Brandon Ayuk is a maybe and a bonus, and if he's available and we bring him into camp and see what it looks like, we go from there. But there are other options for this team. And given the fact that we have so many questions about what the depth chart is going to look like after Terry McLaurin, and that includes Antonio Williams, who you drafted in the third round, that certainly has expectations, and the, you know, the coaching staff, and specifically David Blau, looks and says he could be Amon-Ra St. Brown type of talent. Okay, maybe. But we don't know that for sure, right? It's like draft grades. You've got them, and you look at what you have, but you don't actually know until you see it on the field, and you see time and development and all those things. If I'm the Commanders, Stephon Diggs makes sense. It sounds like this is becoming more and more of a thing. I think him coming back home, went to Maryland, you know, there it makes sense. Stephon Diggs has enough left in the tank where he's a threat. Defenses will certainly respect him, even though he's not peak Stephon Diggs anymore. But why are we also not talking about the potential of bringing back Debo Samuel? I don't know where this narrative came from that Debo Samuel was some complete bust last year. Debo was traded for a fifth round pick for him. That's it. That's not a big price to pay. And he was brought over to not be a number one receiver, but to be a guy that fit a similar role that he did in San Francisco. Get some carries, line him up in the slot, line him up out wide, make plays, get the ball in his hands, tough runs, things like that. He also was one of the best returners in the NFL and dealing with injuries. Now, if you want to talk about the injuries, that's fine. But there's no like huge market for Debo Samuel. He's still on the market right now. And Juwan Jennings is now off. So that's a receiver that the Commanders could have considered that they clearly didn't want to. 1 year, $13 million for Juwan Jennings. if you're the Commanders and you look at that price, he's younger, and he's somebody that probably has more potential down the road and more years left in the NFL. If that's even the starting point for Deebo Samuel and Stephon Diggs, and let's even up it. Let's just say that if you're the Commanders, you gave Stephon Diggs and Deebo Samuel, and they were okay with this because you want short-term deals, each of them a one-year, $15 million deal. Let's just say. The Commanders have $43 million in cap space still available. And they've got options that they can still address that for the short term would make sense at receiver while Antonio Williams develops. And next year you probably look at another receiver in the draft or maybe a big free agent that you could target in at wide receiver in free agency. Why not have a Deebo Samuel and a Stephon Diggs, if, again, they want that one-year deal? But, again, there's not a lot of market for those guys right now, so it's not like there's competition and offers for 3- and 4-year deals for them at this point in their career. The Commanders could spend $30 million on those two receivers for one-year deals and still have $13 million left over for more wiggle room for all kinds of stuff that they can handle the rest of the offseason into camp. And, hell, if you really want, even maybe Brandon Ayuk. And then for Ayuk, there's pretty much no guarantees. It's all cap-friendly, and it's all incentive-based, and then he doesn't make the team because he's just not good in camp and doesn't look ready to go, where they put him on the pup list to start the season, and he's not really earning much that way. Or there's other options you can do. They can load this receiver room up and just say, best guys make the team. That's it. And if you end up having a wide receiver group that's got Terry McLaurin at the top with a young Antonio Williams out there adjusting and learning but not put in a position where he's got to be the number two receiver, we just throw this around. And then you add Stephon Diggs, who if he gets you 850 yards receiving next year and 4 or 5 touchdowns and 50, 60 catches, that's pretty damn good. Mixed with Deebo Samuel, using him in the role that he was supposed to be in last year, also was a returner, which is really helpful. Then you got a Van Jefferson or De'Ami Brown still making the team. Luke McCaffrey, you saw significant improvement from him before he got hurt last year. Plus, he makes the roster as a special teamer, one of the best returners in the NFL as well. Deebo Samuel and Luke McCaffrey together were great as return guys. You have both of those guys on the roster, and maybe Ja'Cory Brooks shows that he takes that next step, and that's your what your roster looks like. Or you got Jalen Lane, so you got to figure out where he's going to fit. Obviously, special teams with him too. It's a lot more depth and a lot more value that's there. And again, you're probably going to have some butthurt feelings when somebody gets cut. But why are we sitting here just acting like Brandon Ayuk's going to come in and just be this receiver that earned $120 million like he did? Which even then, the 49ers thought about trading him. They were going to trade him to the Steelers. You haven't had that much consistency from Brandon Ayuk in his career. And this idea that he's just going to be this savior for this team. No, it's extra credit. It's bonus, right? He comes in and he looks good. Oh, cool. All right. Then he earns the contract that has a lot of incentives in it. If he doesn't, you can cut him. Start him even on the year in the pup list. First 6 weeks, he's not ready. Get him in shape. You can do that. I mean, those are the types of options that this team would have where you can then add a Stephon Diggs and maybe still a Deebo Samuel. And maybe it's just one of them. And that's fine. But you still could have the option of both of them for 1 year. If you can get them to sign one-year deals, or it's like 2-year deal with a team option the next year or whatever, and you have the control as a team and they've got to earn it, then they're in those. This team operated too much on those prove-it one-year deals early on, but you still want to have some on the roster. You want to have guys that have incentives to continue to play well and play in a contract year and earn something down the road. And maybe it's here for a season, and then Stephon Diggs gets another deal somewhere else, or Deebo gets another deal somewhere else. But, you know, we're talking on the wrong side of 30, and that's a whole thing around the NFL. Like, sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't. There's options for this team. I mean, there really are. There are options for this team that I think you have a chance to really take advantage of. And I could see a lot more going on at wide receiver, especially with where the market still is as time goes on. And it's very clear you're not going to be competing with, like, massive offers for Deebo, right? It was like, oh, he could get $20 million a year, so he might go back to Carolina and go home, so they probably won't be able to afford him. Well, what's happened? Nothing yet. I know it's only May, but, you know, got time. You got time to see if this can actually materialize, and you can have a pretty deep roster and receiver room, and it doesn't have to be the long-term commitment, but a short-term. You start looking for some younger guys, because guess what else? Terry McLaurin's only going to get older. How much longer is Terry going to be on this team? That's the other conversation. They got a lot of needs at wide receiver. You can do some now, and you can build towards the future at the same time. And I think that's a really big option for them. Just wouldn't write off Deebo as a guy that could come back. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Tell you what, the NFL really wants to market the Seahawks, don't they? They had 6 nationally televised games in that schedule. I mean, We're going to see the Seahawks-Patriots to open the NFL season on a Wednesday Super Bowl rematch. Haven't had that in 14 years. It's going to be weird to have a game open on a Wednesday and then have the Thursday night game in Australia and then nothing Friday, but it's whatever that sports media television act of 1960 is or whatever. It is what it is this year because they wanted to do it Thursday, Friday, but we'll have Wednesday, Thursday, which at the beginning of the year is fine, and the NFL wants to own every day of the week anyway. But, listen, the Seahawks are a team that surprised everybody doing what they did last year, getting to the point where they're just even a Super Bowl contender, let alone winning the Super Bowl. But they've had a lot of changes this offseason. And, when you set this schedule and we have all these primetime games and certain matchups, they look great on paper, but there's nothing that's guaranteed. And I'm glad the NFL over the years has really kind of stretched out and spread out their flex options a lot more, right? Like, they've gotten to a point where they see down the road, hey, this has the potential to be a really bad matchup. Let's fix that. I mean, the NBA's done it a little bit, too, because there was, it was for a while where we're held hostage with late-season Thursday night games, and it's two backup quarterbacks, and it's just like, oh, my God, can't watch this. I'd argue they could even be more flexible with these, but there's things down the road you have to do, production crews for these and schedules and travels, and you got to give some time to be able to make up all these differences, but Thursday night football was really hurt by that for a while. We had really bad late season matchups. Look, in general, Thursday night football it's already a grind. You got the short schedule, short weeks. You got teams, one team is maybe more prepared than other, but we're getting a similar thing with these international games too. I mean, how many quality London games have we really watched over the years? It's either bad teams or just bad offenses because they don't have a flow and the travel and the jet lag and everything else has affected these guys. And I mean, teams hate it. None of the teams in the NFL actually like any of these international games. Like, I'm sure it's kind of cool to go to London or go to Melbourne or go to, Madrid or any of these. Like, the travel part's cool, but, these guys are still going to be sitting there and working out and going through their process and getting ready and adjusting and doing everything that they have to do. They don't like it. They really don't. It matters to the NFL. It matters from a business perspective, but, at some point, I don't know when this is going to be because there hasn't been a precedent that has really given us an example of this, but at what point are NFL players actually going to go, hey, enough, maybe we need to actually get more in return? I mean, the last CBA, Tom Brady just bitched about it, right? Remember, he was like, you're all stupid. It's like, this Players Association's dumb. Owners got everything they wanted. And he wasn't wrong. And that's generally how it's been. And if you're going to keep expanding the game and, you're going to add 18 games, and at some point the players are going to have to say, this is all done on our backs. We're the ones playing. We're the ones out there throwing our bodies on the line every single week. We want more. This is all theory at this point, but I just feel like the NFL is destined for a work stoppage at some point down the road. The money is getting so big, and the league is expanding so quickly now. The owner, they're just getting everything, and they're adding this travel and all these games. I mean, you look at the miles traveled for teams, where 30,000 miles, I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of time zones. It's something that at some point, just waiting to see the pushback actually happen. I'm waiting to see players finally just realize, hey, we can get more out of this. Like, NFL players actually have leverage here. I mean, it's not full leverage, but let's be honest with ourselves. If you are an NFL player, whether you're top tier or you're the lower end, you're getting a veteran minimum or whatever, you're still making quality money. If you're smart with your money and you decide we are not going to play until we get what we want in a CBA, you can just sit out. Like, if players are actually willing to dig their heels in and not play, these owners aren't going to make any money then. You hit them in the wallet. That's the only way that you make a point, is if you say, we're not playing football. How are you going to make money if we're not playing? We are the product. And if that doesn't exist, owners can't make money, and that's how you actually start winning negotiations for a change. And I mean, all of this travel, all these international games, all these extra games, these Christmas Day and other contracts, and now Netflix is coming in and YouTube and all this, and now the NFL wants to renegotiate with their Sunday Night Football contract because NBC is only paying them $1 billion a year, and they're actually paying the NBA more, even though it's more games. So technically it's not the same thing, but the NFL has a big ego, obviously, and they're like, well, nope, now we want more from you. I mean, the NFL just does whatever it wants. The interesting thing is to see what happens moving forward now. Because for so long, the NFL as a league, right, owns everything. Owns Sundays, owns Thursdays, owns the ratings, live games. It's as a TV show, it's the only thing anybody's watching anymore live. Sports, specifically the NFL. But now they're getting in bed with tech companies. Netflix is a tech company first, right? Prime, It might be Apple. There's YouTube involved now. They are massive companies with huge valuations, huge revenue streams that actually don't need the NFL, right? Like Prime is happy to have the NFL on Thursday nights, and it absolutely benefits their business, but they don't need it. Does YouTube need the NFL? They've been doing just fine without it. Netflix and YouTube are the most watched platforms in this country, by far. They don't need the NFL. So at what point does the NFL's greed actually get mushed back in its face like a little brother where YouTube's like, you want how much? Uh-uh. Nice try. We're captain now. Like, at what point is it going to be I'm captain now from YouTube or Netflix where they realize we've actually got control over the NFL? Because as the rights get more and more expensive, traditional media companies, they're going to struggle. Like NBC, CBS, and all these mergers, they're going to be more mergers. They're going to have to come together to say, like, so we can afford the NFL, we've got to all work together. Meanwhile, Amazon and YouTube and Netflix are sitting around going, we got all the money. We got the cash. We're in charge. It's up to us now to be in control. It's going to be interesting to see. I think there is going to be a point. Mark Cuban talked about this years ago, and I always remember where the fat pig gets slaughtered. Again, I never get it right. I got to look it up what he said. But it's basically just like the NFL getting so greedy and expecting so much, whether it's the amount of games they play, the days of the week they play, watering down the product, whatever the case is, at some point it's going to come back to bite them. I think we're on the verge of that. We really are. Like, there is going to be a point where the NFL is finally pushed back on in some capacity. And it, thank you. I can always count on Metal Chris to get me exactly what I need. I can get, oh yeah, so say it again, say it over the air because that was in my ear.
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. There you go. And I think it's just really interesting to see where the NFL is now. I mean, to go back with NBC and be like, actually, we want more money for Sunday Night Football. And they're like, but we already agreed to a deal. They're going to opt out of these, you know, TV contracts and jack it up again. I mean, you're going to see more. If you don't like where it is now, you're going to see more NFL games on YouTube, Netflix, and Prime. And it's going to continue. They all want to get into sports. They know the sports moves the needle. And you're going to see more of that. I think we got a really interesting stretch coming up here. We really do. But we'll see. We'll see. I know this. There's going to be more NFL games overseas. It's going to continue. Just give us a whole week of it. Just every time zone, 24 hours of the NFL.
Yes.
Give us a game in Fiji. Give us a game on the moon at some point, like Jordan DeJohnny said to us. I think that'd be the case. It's the NFL, man. I mean, listen, it is still king. Nick Ashew on the Fan.